Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, or whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host this week, Jason Ruggiero, in for Andy Birdman Burdick, who's out on vacation this week, soaking up the sun and the waves all up and down the coast. But in the studio here, we've got the only doctor around who gives his patients heart palpitations when he walks into the room.
They don't want to see me.
Soon to be Dr. Garrett Britton.
How you doing?
And up from the bullpen for the spot start, the former starter, the big red machine, the ginger prince of Crawford County himself, Bob Finkbeiner.
Hey, how are you? Glad to be back here.
So, Andy's out on vacation. We're down here in the studio doing the dirty work. Gentlemen, I looked at the All-Star voting this week, which is that's another matter entirely, the All-Star game. But if the All-Star game was tomorrow, there'd be four Orioles in the starting lineup. Bob, can you name them?
Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, J.J. Hardy, and Chris Davis.
That's right. And Nate McLouth is the sixth highest voted outfielder, former Pirate, two times removed. And Matt Wieters is second to Joe Mauer.
And you said Jose Bautista was in starting vote or just behind too?
Well, the three starting outfielders are Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, and Mike Trout. And Markakis is the lowest vote-getting outfielder. Behind him is Bautista and Torrey Hunter.
Because Bautista, a former two-time Pirate as well.
That's true. So, former Pirates all over the diamond there on the All-Star game here. When is that? July 16th, I think?
That sounds about right.
I think that's right. I think the team's announced July 7th, and then July 16th is the game.
I think that whoever is organizing this rush of Oriole player votes, a politician should hire that man to run their campaign.
Well, and Manny Machado is second at third base to Miguel Cabrera, although second to Miguel Cabrera means 2 million votes behind.
Miguel's pretty good.
Well, yeah, and you might make the argument, and of course that's the whole disgusting part about the voting for the All-Star game, I guess. But you could really make the argument that Manny Machado deserves to be on the team more than Nate McLouth or even Nick Markakis, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyways, that could be its own soapbox of its own hour-long podcast, the voting for the All-Star game. So we'll get right to it today with all the medical news from Dr. Garrett.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet. All right. Well, it's a long list in Cleveland still.
Oh, here we go.
But I think they're turning the ship around. They've actually been getting some good news. Zach McAllister was seen by Dr. Thomas Graham for this middle finger issue. And Dr. Graham said, nothing to worry about.
Well, that's a load off my mind, and I'm sure Bob's as well, and all the Cleveland
Adam Miller,
metro area.
Alex White.
He's not going to have to cut anything.
That's good.
So he was cleared to throw. He's throwing fastballs now. He's not cleared to throw curves yet, and progressing well.
Well, and that'll be interesting because the curve was this big pitch that made him a lot different pitcher than in years past. So I guess I'll still kind of hold my breath until he snaps off a couple curveballs and doesn't grab that finger in pain.
And and that's the interesting about especially finger sprains, because you know there's so many delicate muscles in the fingers that, you know, if it was a tear, you get some scar tissue in there. He might have some trouble down the road. We'll just have to see. Lou Marson, who
banished to the table.
Who was seen by the good Dr. Andrews down in Alabama. Dr. Andrews' report showed no structural damage. He too won't have to cut.
So why is he still out then? Why is he still in pain, I wonder?
Well, I think
because his neck was jammed down into his
he's been having
back by Desmond Jennings.
He's been having trouble with his shoulder, I think, for quite a while.
Yeah.
They may just be playing it safe.
Well, I don't think they're in any hurry with Deion Gomes
Yeah, they don't really need to.
And once, you know, once he goes out on rehab assignment, they only have 30 days. So the clock starts ticking. So they're going to take their sweet time.
Take their good time with him. Yeah. It may not be indicative of his shoulder. More of the situation. Chris Perez. Ugh. If anyone cares.
Oh, my. He got absolutely torched in his rehab start or appearance. I think it was a start. I think he actually started the game.
Did they start him?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was.
He just,
Three home runs,
five runs, hit somebody, I think. It was a train wreck.
And he's throwing today.
Yes.
So we'll
and then
see
he's probably going to throw one more time, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, today's a simulated game against the Arrows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Today's he's throwing a simulated game against the Arrows, and I think he's supposed to make an actual appearance.
Tuesday?
Monday or Tuesday. And they're going to use him at the end of the game.
That's right.
Is what they said, yeah.
That's right. Give him a chance.
Because starting sure as heck didn't work.
So, no. So we'll see. Blake Wood moved his rehab assignment up to Akron.
All right. That could be the guy we're looking for, Bob.
Maybe.
He could help this bullpen because right now, man, we could
bullpen use... Bullpen is a lot of help.
We could use somebody. Yeah.
The bullpen Maka instills absolutely no fear in anyone right now.
No, not really.
Except for maybe Cody Allen, but that's for later.
Yeah, and he didn't have a good game last night, but generally, yeah.
And then Asdrubal Cabrera, who it's actually good news.
Yeah.
They say he's looking good. And I think what happened was they've seen these injuries before, and Cabrera hasn't. So Cabrera's probably feeling fine. He's like, you know, I can do it. But they're saying, you know, we've seen these before.
Take it slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's.
Now he's traveling with the team to Baltimore, right, this week?
That's the way I understand it.
He was taking grounders and hit Friday. Looking good, saying he's, you know, no pain.
Right. And he's traveling with the team to Baltimore, but the expectation is he's not going to play till after the Baltimore series, I think.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah. They said...
Tito's expectation is he's not going to play till after the Baltimore series. And he made an interesting point in the one article I read. Mike Avilas has started every game at shortstop since Cabrera went out. And now he's batting second in the lineup. So what's that tell you? I'm a big Mike Avilas fan.
I like him too. I think nice job with the Royals, then nice job with the Red Sox.
Anyways, that's for later.
So we'll follow him now. Typically, with an injury like that, it's 3 to 4 weeks, and that was on June 4th. So we're right about on schedule.
Yeah. Now Cabrera said he didn't want to go on a rehab assignment, but then. Kind of backed off and said, well, I'll do whatever they want me to do. I don't want to go, but if they want me to, I will.
Yeah. They, and I think that's, you know, they've seen these injuries. They know how they go.
I think Angel Pagan was on a rehab assignment and re-injured his hamstring the other night in the rehab assignment.
Yeah. Yeah.
That happens, you know.
I do better read that if Perez pitches in the, a game this week, I think it's Monday or Tuesday, the only home team locally would be the Mahoning Valley Scrappers.
Oh, yeah?
How about that? Low Class A, short season.
He'll probably get lit up. Oh, my patience with him is so thin.
I think everyone's is. And then last, Nick Swisher.
Yeah.
Kind of the bad news. Of the week out with this shoulder injury. Now earlier he had this knee issue that kind of went under the rug. He was seen with a limp, but he played through it. Not sure what that was all about, but now he's out June 15th with this shoulder injury. He received cortisone injections Monday, so you know, a while ago. He's expected to return today or Sunday.
Originally,
or
he was going to play yesterday,
right?
And Lonnie.
Well, they said he was doubtful.
Yeah.
So maybe today, Sunday, or tomorrow, Monday.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him DH.
Yeah.
But that's I guess more the issue. Swisher says, from what I read, that he feels like he can deal with the pain of from the shoulder of playing first base. He doesn't want to play the outfield because he was having pain there originally playing the outfield, but he feels like he could play first base. He just can't swing.
Yeah.
That's when he heard it. It was actually the game I was at last Saturday. He took a mighty, mighty cut against Jordan Zimmermann. And you saw him, I watched the replays when I got home, you saw him take this big, big cut, try to put one in the bleachers, and just turn back with this wince and kind of hunched over, grabbing that shoulder.
Well, that could be... Nope, that could get serious.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about it when we talk about Pittsburgh with Karstens, who had he just had arthroscopic surgery to clean up his labrum.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see if Swisher comes back today or tomorrow, or if if they put him on the DL at this point, he could come off in about 5 days. But
we'll see.
He's been out for almost a week.
But all in all, I think good news out of Cleveland. Over to Pittsburgh. Jose Tabata began his minor league rehab with Indianapolis on Friday.
Jose Tabata sighting.
He was out with this strained oblique on May 27th. I think this is kind of an atypical progression for an oblique injury.
How long has he been out?
Almost a month.
It happens. Joe Smith missed a long time with that oblique, remember?
Yep.
Of course, he throws from the ground up. So.
Last year, I think Brendan Morrow missed a lot of time, too, with an oblique injury.
He did. They're tough. And, of course, you hear the old-timers, well, there's nothing called an oblique injury when I play. It's called a side cramp.
Rodriguez... starting his rehab in Indianapolis today. He's out with left forearm tightness is the official.
So this is his first rehab start?
Diagnosis.
Because then, if it is, we'll see how that goes.
I think it is.
I think it is as well. The old phantom forearm tightness. See how if it magically cleared up a few weeks off.
This is his first. We'll see. And that move was what allowed Cole to come up.
Right.
So, we'll see how he does. And then Jeff Karstens had this arthroscopic surgery repair for, he had a torn rotator cuff muscle and some labrum damage. So.
He looked at me, like, deeply in the eyes when he said that, like, he was going to be saying about Nick Swisher in a couple months.
No.
Let's hope not.
Jeff Carson's been eating sunflower seeds for the past 4 months. Every Pirates game I watch, he's just like up there on the top rail, just.
We got to feel bad for the guy. Sutures came out a week ago. We'll see how. I'm not sure what the recovery is in the professionals from something like this.
A while.
It could be. Quite a while.
It's going to be a while, especially for a pitcher.
Gomez out with this forearm strain. He's scheduled to start Wednesday against the Mariners.
See how that goes.
It is what it, yeah. And then James McDonald out with the shoulder injury. Clint Hurdle did not sound happy about his start.
Well,
inconsistent, not sharp, and similar to the one before.
Ouch.
Not exactly high praise.
Ouch. Well, you know, like if you think about it, who's left in the Pirates rotation from the beginning? Locke. Right? Burnett's hurt. Wandy's hurt.
Yep.
McDonald's hurt / ineffective. Carson's never made it into the rotation, but probably was one of the guys they originally penciled in there.
Right.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're 15 games over 500 with their 6 through 10 starters is.
The bullpen. Bullpen's awesome.
Their bullpen is awesome.
And then last is AJ Burnett with this calf injury. He's progressing. He's not in this walking boot anymore.
Always a good sign to get out of the walking boot.
Throwing on flat ground. They say he's nowhere near throwing off the mound. So
take that for what it is.
Yeah.
Nowhere near could mean a week. You know, it just means he hasn't thrown off the mound yet.
I mean, they're saying late June.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see how rehab goes.
We're pretty much in late June. So.
Yeah, it's here.
So, yeah.
The good news is it's not a shoulder injury.
Yes.
Like the rest of the Pirate staff, seems like.
Yeah, shoulder or elbow or forearm injury. Those are the kind you want to avoid if you throw a ball for a living. Calf injury, I think AJ he'll bounce
we'll
back
see,
eventually.
That, like we were talking about in the last session, you know, that can really throw off your mechanics.
Right, because it's plant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it wouldn't be his plant, it'd be his drive foot. So, yeah, well, all right.
So, you know, tough.
A lot of injuries around the Tri-State clubs here.
Usually, I think most of the injuries are, you know, spring training and early. We're kind of getting late in the season.
Not for Cleveland. Welcome to Indians baseball. All right. We'll move on. We'll get back to Indians baseball and all that it means here in a little bit. So thank you for the updates there, Dr. Garrett.
Sure thing.
Now let's talk about the Pirates. The Birdman, out on vacation, has taken time out of his busy sun-soaking schedule to send us some Pirates news and notes.
He's a very devoted fan.
He talks about AJ Burnett's injury is lessened by Garrett Cole's performance since being called up. Speaking of Cole, he made his third straight solid start the other night against Anaheim, pitched 6 1/3 innings, gave up 4 hits and 5 Ks. His four-seamer touched or surpassed 100 multiple times. I, in fact, even saw it hit 101. He also surrendered his first career home run against Albert Pujols. So if you're going to surrender your first career home run, that's all right. First career walk to Mark Trumbo. So far this year, he's pitched 18 1/3 innings. Only struck out 8, but he's only walked 1. Now, the thing about Garrett Cole, I was watching on MLB Network when they were all amped up about Garrett Cole's start and throwing over 100, obviously. And I will give them credit. The thing that they were pointing out that is very true is he wasn't throwing 100 up at the nose or shoulders. He was throwing 100 down at the knees on the outside corner. If you can do that, that's going to be very, very, very effective. The thing I'd like to talk to Andy about when he gets back is, you know, Garrett Cole, while he's a guy who can throw upper 90s. I think, Bob, you said Fangraphs had his average fastball at like
95.69
point decimal.
Yeah.
I'm sure Andy loves to see the radar gun light up triple digits when Garrett Cole's out there, but I think the other side of Andy, his hypochondriac worry side, his heart just gets going a little fast every time he does it, because it's not like Randy Johnson, where if Randy Johnson wasn't throwing 98, you were like, what's wrong with Randy Johnson? He doesn't have it today. And, you know, they're giving this excuse on MLB Network like, oh, he's out in Southern California where his family and friends are, and he's just letting it rip. Well, if I'm Clint Hurdle and I see Garrett Jones out there just letting it rip, I got to be a little nervous in the dugout there. I'm not saying anything's going to happen to him. I hope nothing happens to him. I just think it's interesting that this guy who, while he was a very hard thrower, is a very hard thrower, wasn't known for hitting triple digits. And then we saw him do it once in his first start or come real close. He did it a couple times in his second start. Does it even more in his third start. Something to watch to see. Does he rein it back in? Does he just keep letting it loose? And maybe he can throw that hard.
I kind of wonder also if it's beyond just the family being there, but it was more of him being comfortable finally in the MLB setting.
Well,
that's his third start.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, he's feeling a bit more relaxed now that he knows what he can do
and
have success doing it. So,
Well, that's what I mean. It'll be interesting. Does he keep throwing this hard? Like, is this how hard he can throw? Or is he really just cutting back and letting it fly every once in a while?
Right.
I don't know. So his call-up, though, it's really electrified the Pirates fan base. We saw that when we went down to that game in Pittsburgh. I mean, that place was unreal. Just an atmosphere like you've never seen. This week, Pirates had a big series with the Reds that they split. So that's good. They've, you know, the Reds, man, that's going to be their, that's going to be the thorn in their side, even more so than the Cardinals, I think, just because of the relationship they've always kind of had with the Reds. So they didn't gain ground. They didn't lose it. And Tony Sanchez, Pirates first round pick in 2009, checkered pants and all, was called up to Pittsburgh Friday night before the interleague series began with Anaheim. His role was to DH against lefties. He was supposed to do that Saturday against the Angels' Jason Vargas, but Vargas did not make the start. So now maybe Pirates fans will get a chance to see him Tuesday against Seattle when they put out lefty Joe Saunders. So that's always something to watch for when your first-round pick finally makes his debut. Whether it's just a DH or not, you know, you want to see how he does. Brandon Compton was optioned back to Indy to make room for Sanchez. In other minor league news, Stetson Ali, I almost can't read this. Stetson Ali was optioned to High A Bradenton, or promoted to High A Bradenton, which I'm all in favor. I've been saying for weeks now he should be promoted because obviously he can destroy Low A pitching. So we'll see what he does up there. And Luis Heredia, 18-year-old right-hander in the Pirate system, was assigned to Low A West Virginia this week, which Andy is sad about because he was hoping he was going to be optioned to Jamestown, so he'd be easier for the Tri-State staff to get an eyeball on. The only other thing there is Andy and I will be doing a trade talk Tri-State at the Stretch. We'll talk a lot about the Pirates and who they might be targeting in the trade deadline season this week, so watch for that on the YouTubes and the website there. And I guess now we'll go on to the Tigers. We'll do a little Tigers bit because Bob's here, and I think we want to talk about Jose Valverde more than anything else.
Goodbye, Papa Grande.
That was a short stint, wasn't it?
Yes, the desperation has worn thin, or should we say just worn out as well.
Yeah. Jimmy Leland there just had enough of Papa Grande. I guess he's saying he's going to go with Joaquin Benoit, right?
In most situations, yes. I guess he's still leaving the door open, though, for a Coke or a Drew Smalley, but just following that team this year. I know Smalley's doing well in the bullpen. He was great. I just think he's so much better served in the rotation. But
I agree.
They're loaded right now. I mean,
but they don't have any room. Right. They don't have any room for him there.
Exactly.
So do you think that's a guy that they could look to trade for a bullpen arm?
Well, a lot of rumors so far. I know it's early in the rumor season, but they have Felo Rosado, I guess, on Jonathan Papelbon, perhaps as a trade target.
Well, and here's the other thing I've heard. I mean, we all know the Tiger system is not loaded.
Right.
There's not a lot of options there. If you want to trade for someone of serious impact...
Although Bruce Rondon is pitching very well in AAA now.
All right. But the biggest name, obviously, in the Tigers system is Nick Castellanos.
Super hot right now, too.
And his name is getting bandied about as far as using him as a chip to get what the Tigers need. I mean, we could go all day on that matter, whether a team like the Tigers is right or wrong to trade that stud prospect for what they feel is the last piece to get them to the World Series. I don't think there's any argument that the Tigers are close. You know, I do think it's a little interesting. Like, you look at their offense, okay? Austin Jackson, Torrey Hunter, Miggy, Fielder, V-Mart, Avila, Infante, and Avisel Garcia.
Peralta's hitting well,
Peralta.
Too.
That's a good offense, right? They have a great pitching staff. Scherzer's, what, 11-0?
Yep.
Verlander, Sanchez.
Fister. Porcello's pitching well.
He didn't have a good start the other night, but generally, yeah, he's been pitching well. But so I look at that team, and you might say, well, it's the bullpen. They need a closer. You know, they should trade whoever they need to get that closer and get that championship. Well, then why are they only like 3 games ahead of the Indians?
Right.
That's what worries me about the Tigers. Because I look at that team, and I look at that staff, and I see what could be a great team. But then they're only like 3 games ahead of the Indians, who have a staff that pales next to the Tigers staff. And while they have a good offense, is not in the class of the Tigers. You don't have a Prince Fielder. You don't have a Miguel Cabrera. The best hitter you have is Nick Swisher, and he's hurt. Then probably the next best hitter you have is Asdrubal Cabrera. He's hurt. And then you get to Jason Kipnis and Carlos Santana. So I don't know. I don't know what Dave Dombrowski does. Does he unload Nick Castellanos?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah, and I think that's how Dave Dombrowski feels right now too.
Because you're also going to have the dilemma in a couple years, probably in like 2-3 years, we're going to lose these guys. But it'd be age, expiring contracts. You're not going to bring them back. And what these young guys you've been grooming now take over, but at the same time, you're really close now.
Right.
So
that's the dilemma.
Right.
You know, and it's like as we've seen with guys at the Indians, you know, it's Michael Brantley's third season, and Michael Brantley's turning into someone you can count on. Not to be the best player on the team, right, but to do his job day in and day out. Hit for average, doubles power, play good defense. It took 3 years to get to that.
Now, perhaps a barometer of whether or not a trade may or may not happen might be, you look, was it 2 years ago when the Giants sent Zach Wheeler to the Mets for Carlos Beltran?
Yeah.
You know, their high-regarded pitching prospect they sent away for that last missing piece, and they missed the playoffs.
Right.
And we saw Wheeler pitch pretty well in his debut. And who's to say he's going to have guaranteed success?
Sure.
But if he does, oh, man, that's tough to give up.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, the Brewers ended up not giving up too much, really, because Matt LaPorta is pretty much flamed out. But they give up Matt LaPorta, Michael Brantley, Zach Putnam, and Zach Jackson. Or
Rob Bryson.
Rob Bryson. Yeah. And Zach Jackson for CeCe and get through one round of the playoffs? Or was it two?
I think they got to the playoffs and then lost.
They got to the playoffs and then lost. Right. So, yeah, couldn't get out of the first round of the playoffs.
But arguably, they wouldn't have even made the playoffs without Sabathia.
Right. So what's better? Is Michael Brantley now going to help that team more than that one playoff appearance?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
It is.
Maybe that's what that fan base needed to keep them engaged and supporting the team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a problem in Detroit, though.
No.
But you do get to a point where it's like, if you're continually good, but you continually can't seal the deal,
you become the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, and your fans and your fans become just as turned off by the team as a perennially bad team.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like fans are always spoiled.
Right.
So the team that always makes it to the ALCS and never finishes, or whatever the case might be, those fans are just as upset as the Cleveland fans because they're like, we never make the playoffs. You know, and the Cleveland fans look at them like, at least you make it in, man. We haven't been in the playoffs since 2007. You know? Dr. Garrett, you had something to add?
No, you're right. It, you know, I almost wonder if it's worse.
In a way, I think it is, because it's like so close, but you can't.
Yeah.
You know,
you're set up for, you know, something great, and then, you know, first round of gone. Yeah, as a Penguins fan.
Oh, here we go.
There it is.
Yeah, there's a spoiled fan. Yep, there's a spoiled fan for you, a Penguins fan. As the great Tom Petty, who we saw in concert, says, something that feels so close but still so far out of reach. You know, that's kind of where the Tigers are right now.
But back to the original question, though. They could, I believe, acquire a reliever to bolster that bullpen without giving up Castellanos, too.
They could get relievers.
Yes.
Certainly, yeah.
Whether they can close and have
that's
comfort in closing, I don't know.
Whether they're going to be able to get a front-of-the-line closer without giving up Castellanos is a little unclear. And you're going to have to wonder, too, if you're the team holding that chip, you look at the Tigers farm system, you know the Tigers are desperate.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to demand?
maybe
Nick Castellanos.
And maybe they trade Garcia instead.
They might, which maybe that would be better for them.
Yeah.
Because they, while they don't have outfielders of his abilities, I think replacing your nine-hole hitter with someone you could get in a trade at the same deadline, you know, a similar player, a veteran, is going to have much less of an impact than trading Nick Castellanos long term. All right, well, let's talk about the Tribe for a little bit. Bob, you are actually a true Tribe fan, although we've tasked you with covering the Tigers for the site. When I look at the Tribe, you know, I see this up and down. It's been the whole year. You know, you win 14 out of 18, then you lose 8 straight. Then I think it was like that botched pop-up last week and another, like, 2 little glitches, and they would have won 8 straight immediately after losing 8 straight.
Right.
So this team is just up and down, up and down. I think they don't get enough credit for dealing with the injuries that they've dealt with all year. There has not been a time yet where I think more than two days in a row they've put out their actual starting nine. Michael Bourne was hurt. Carlos Santana was hurt. Kipnis was hurt.
Swisher's hurt.
Cabrera's hurt. So I don't think they get enough credit for the depth that they've actually assembled on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking before the podcast, Mike Aviles has started every game at shortstop since Cabrera went out and has moved up in the order
right
since starting those games.
And compare that with in years past, it may have been Jason Donald.
Right. Jason Donald, a Brent Lillibridge, Adam Everett, you know, those kind of guys. That's who we'd be looking at John McDonald every day,
right?
Instead of John McDonald as our backup. So I don't think they get enough credit for that. Obviously, the rotation has been better than advertised.
Mm-hmm.
Like you saw Corey Kluber last night. He's had a really great year. He really struggled that whole game, but managed to go
5 2/3.
Five and two thirds, give up 3 runs. You know, and that's essentially your number 5 starter. You know, and there's times where he's pitched like
a number one, number
like
two,
like number one, number two, where he goes 8 innings, gives up no runs, just a couple hits here and there. So when I look at the team, I think their biggest weakness right now is the bullpen. Their bullpen is in shambles. They had a 5-run lead last night against the Twins. The Twins! Not the Tigers. Not the 27 Yankees. The Twins. They won the game by 1 run.
Yes.
They couldn't get... Okay, Nick Hagedorn came in, got a strikeout on a ball in the dirt. The guy just gifted him the strikeout. That ended that inning. Then he was just horrendous in the next inning. Couldn't get anyone out. The announcers were even saying, you know, you see the frustration of the Red Sox and the Indians dealing with Nick Hagedorn because it's 97-mile-an-hour fastball, strike one, 97-mile-an-hour fastball, strike two, breaking ball in the dirt, ball one, breaking ball in the dirt, ball two, fastball way out of the zone, ball three, ball four, you walked him. So you finally, they get rid of Hagedorn. They bring in Shaw. Or was it? It was Allen. They brought in Cody Allen.
Right, Allen, yeah.
They only let him face, I think, one batter. Or two. He gave up a hit, and then he got out of the inning.
Struck out a batter on a high change curve.
High curve.
Awful pitch.
Yeah, horrible pitch. It broke above the guy's head and came down to about his letters of his jersey, and he swung at it. Then for whatever reason, probably because they're up by 4 runs,
right,
they decide, okay, Cody got us out of the jam. We're not going to use him. Bring in Shaw, who's generally good. He gives up a run.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get anybody out. So then they bring in Rich Hill. At this point, I know it's the right thing to bring in Rich Hill, but I'm like, oh, here we go. Because Rich Hill can't get anybody out right now.
Right.
He does. He actually pitches very well.
2 Ks.
2 Ks. Although Bert Blylevin was in the booth because it was a Fox game.
Yep.
And he was saying... I'm trying to remember who was batting in that second at bat against Rich Hill. Domet. It was Ryan Domet. Rich Hill threw 2 pretty stanky curveballs, and Ryan Domet looked like a fifth grader swinging at them. He then proceeded to throw a high fastball. then an outside fastball, then a high fastball, then a curveball that Domet fouled off, then a fastball he fouled off, and then a curveball finally to strike him out. And as Domet's walking off the field, Bert Blyleven goes, "Thank you!" Because the whole at bat, he's been saying he looked horrible on the first two curveballs. Just keep throwing him curveballs. He can't hit that pitch. Mm-hmm. It took him 8 pitches to get back to it. And Blyleven correctly is saying that's how you run up a pitch count. That's how you wear out your arm. Mm-hmm. That's how you think you're not as effective as you really are and get in a rut and lose your confidence. I don't know where those pitches were. I don't know if Santana was calling them. I don't know if Tito's calling them. I don't know if Mickey Callaway. I don't know how they do it. I don't know who's calling the pitches. So, you know, it looks good in the box score. And it's good for his confidence. But in the long run, it was kind of a, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Then Vinny Pastano enters the game.
Oh, man.
Okay. Supposedly our closer. Supposedly our best pitcher. With a... it was a 2-run lead at that point, wasn't it? 3-run lead.
3-run lead.
3-run lead. Gives up a run. Mm-hmm. On the, there's a double and a ground advances him, and right. then the base hit and he gives up a run. Or no, it's a ground out.
It was more no ground out. And
yeah, because then the bases were clear. Right. Because then
Parmalee
hits a solo home run. Now, from a 5-run lead, when Corey Kluber leaves the game, it's a 1-run lead against the Twins with our closer already in the game. There's no... We had Matt Albers warming up in the bullpen.
That was scary.
But, you know, and in a way, though, I'm like, good. Bring somebody else in here because this guy, he's not doing it. I don't know where Joe Smith was. I'm assuming he was unavailable because he pitched the night before consecutive days because his name was never brought up. He never even took his warm-up off, which is fine because, you know, you don't want to overwork guys. But...
Is it me, though? It seems watching Pastano, that sense of absolute sheer confidence is missing right now.
It is. And
it looks missing.
And the angriness
right.
is missing. Because once he gave up that home run to Parmalee, he pretty much ran Florimon right out of the batter's box. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much like, okay, I'm done. Because then he broke off 2 nasty sliders right away. And that at bat was over really before it started. The last at bat. Mm-hmm. And maybe it wasn't Florimon because now I think the guy was batting on the right side.
Oh, he finished off with Dozier.
Brian Dozier. Dozier. Yeah. Right. And they were talking legitimately that Dozier has hit 4 home runs in his last 5 games. So they're like, this is not the guy if you're the Indians that you want up here with a 1-run lead. But he dispatched with Brian Dozier pretty quickly. You know, if that was the first time you saw Vinny Pastano, like if you just turned the game on at that moment, you'd be like, oh, I guess Pastano really had it working. Mm-hmm. No. I don't know what's going on out there, honestly. I think maybe some of it's being overworked because in the beginning of the year, the bullpen
was taxed heavily,
although they had an 8-man bullpen for the majority of the beginning of the year. They don't have that now because they sent Langwell down to get Chisenhall. Mm-hmm. I think they need bullpen help more than anything because to me, that game is a microcosm of what's wrong with that team. Your starting pitching was meh, you know, but it kept you in the game. You scored more than enough runs, 8 runs, to win a ball game. Your bullpen's handed a 5-run lead with 3 innings to go, or 4 innings to go, and they barely finished the job for you. The sad part is, people will point to Chris Perez, you know, in the national media who don't really follow the team, be like, well, it's because they don't have their closer. He's not going to make this any better unless he's completely 100% healthy and focused.
Right.
Which I'm not convinced he's ever been healthy this year, and I'm not convinced he's going to be healthy when he comes back.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the other problem they have is, for right now, you have to get more consistency out of Carrasco. Obviously, his last start was good. Ubaldo has been pitching pretty you know, all right for most of the year. Look like a more than 5 2/3 innings.
Yeah.
And get that bullpen starting relief too. I mean, outside of Matheson and Kluber, who can go deep in games, you're getting your bullpen.
Yeah.
In this fifth, sixth, that's not necessarily ideal.
It's not ideal, but you would think that if your starter can get you into the sixth inning, a major league bullpen could finish the game for you. Could find somebody in the seven guys sitting out there.
They got to find some lefty option in the bullpen.
That's the problem.
Barnes didn't work out. Huff was DFA'd. Hagedorn can't
find the strike zone.
Rich Hill's been not very good at all either this year.
He started well. And he's been horrible lately.
Right.
So it's either... I think that outing last night was a big outing for Rich Hill, honestly. Because I think he was getting to the end of his leash. Because it was pretty ugly there for a while. And they're getting to the point where somebody like that, they can't keep them around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, I mean, we talk about Tigers bullpen. They talk about Tigers bullpen all the time at MLB Network. Indians bullpen is not much better.
No.
It's got more options. It has more depth. But like a game like last night, it was literally one of those games where Tito is just, all right, well, try this guy. Oh, you can't get anybody out. Try this guy. And you can't blame him. Like, I'm sitting there. There's no one else I'd rather. There's no one else to put in.
I didn't understand, though, why use Allen when they did, though.
About to be a completely different game, I guess.
Yeah, I just prefer him being used later in the innings.
I think he felt he needed Cody Allen to get out of that jam.
Yeah.
Because Nick Hagedorn was working them into quite a little pickle. I don't know necessarily why he didn't come out the next inning.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was because they thought, okay, we got this settled. We still got a big lead. Let's go back. Brian Shaw has... let's face it, been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bad outing for him. So generally, that's probably going to work in that case to go to Brian Shaw there. But, you know, the game, I went to the game last Saturday against the Nationals. Scott Kazmir gave up 5 runs in 2 1/3 innings. 4 home runs, I think. Either 3 or 4 home runs. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, it's going to be a long day. Because I see in the second inning, Matt Albers come out of the bullpen.
Yep.
Matt Albers pitches like 2 scoreless innings. The bullpen puts zeros up. All these guys put zeros up. Albers, Shaw. I'm not sure if Hagedorn entered the game. I feel like he might have pitched just like 1 or 2 batters. It wasn't an extended appearance. Point being, Cody Allen, he put up a 0. We get to the 8th inning. The Indians are leading now because of our offense. Has, you know, Mark Reynolds hit a home run. Santana hit a home run. Brantley doubles off the wall. On and on and on. Now we're leading. We put Joe Smith in the 8th inning. He gives up a run. All right. It's tied now. You blew the hold. It's all right. Let's move on. Pestano comes out in the 9th inning. He gives up a home run. This is not how this is supposed to work. Once we got through Albers and Shaw and Allen and the 5 innings of relief they put up where they didn't allow a run, I thought, oh, here we go. We're going to win this. We pulled it out. No. Now, as my father-in-law would hit me over the head with a hammer if I didn't mention that the pitch before Pestano gave up the home run, there was a foul pop that Swisher and Kipnis let drop between them. You know, it's one of those things. You should have caught it. It was definitely Swisher's ball. I'm sitting there in the mezzanine, and he's like, you can see his butt settling under it. And then it just falls 4 feet behind him. And Kipnis is looking at him like, what was that? But the point being, Vinny Pestano still then gave up the gopher ball on the next pitch.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm sorry they didn't catch it. They should have caught it. You should have been out of the inning. But you can't be like, come on, man. And then just give up the gopher ball on the next one. So... I don't know. This bullpen, though, Bob.
But But the bright spot is they've now won the last four series.
They have, and they could very easily sweep the Twins today. And the bright spot really is, I believe, that the rest of the year, the cumulative record of the teams they face for the rest of the year is under 500.
Yeah, I sent out a tweet actually a couple weeks ago, maybe. Mentioned that because I saw that headline where of the 97 remaining games, I want to say 70 of them were played against opponents with a record of 500 or less.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it, they haven't played very many games in the Central.
No.
And the only team above 500 in the Central is the Tigers, and they're only three games above or so. So it's going to be a low winning percentage. So I think they do have a good chance, you know, to hang right there near the top and make that move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we've been saying, they just need to hang near 500 and then make that move at the trade deadline. If you're Chris Antonetti, Bob, what's that move you think you're going to make? What do you think's the move that takes this club?
Well, I found it interesting. I'm not necessarily a big fan of Jim Bowden, but his column on ESPN mentions them acquiring a big outfield bat.
That has been.
I thought that's interesting. That would be kind of nice.
Well, and there is a lot of talk about that. You know, how Swisher and Santana are the best hitters that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one is that elite. You know, like we're talking about with the Tigers. You don't have a Prince Fielder. You don't have Miguel Cabrera. You have a lot of professional hitters mm-hmm. who put up very good at bats. But if you get that one guy, now all of a sudden it lengthens that lineup out just that much, you know. And
I'm probably the blind optimist that thinks that Cleveland has enough tools right now in the system pitching wise. I do like Carrasco. I think he'll be fine. He's definitely talented enough to pitch very, very effectively.
Sure.
I'm still high on Trevor Bauer.
Oh yeah.
I was gonna mention to you earlier before we started recording this, Bauer's numbers, when he's ahead in the count, his splits, are downright disgusting.
Yeah.
But when he falls behind early in the count, it's atrocious. I mean, you can't see a more divided gulf between splits, between getting ahead behind the count, than what he does in now AAA in Columbus. He's got to be able to figure that out, and if he does, he's going to be
right.
Disgusting.
That's what it's all about. First pitch strike.
Oh.
You know, that's what he needs to do. You know, and it's tough because kind of like we're talking about with the Tigers, but in a different sense a little. If you're Chris Antonetti, if you're Mark Spiro, when you look at this team, is this the year you make that big trade? Or do you let it go another year? You know, maybe this wasn't the year you thought you were going to compete. You know, so if you're 500 at the trade deadline, I don't think you can take a rental player because you need somebody that can help you next year.
And to me, this team's built more for competing next year and year after that than they are this year.
Because as we were kind of talking about earlier, who's the only person you lose after this year?
Reynolds, I believe.
Mark Reynolds.
Yeah.
So, you know, and of course the hope would be that Lonnie Chisenhall can fill that, obviously not the power
mm-hmm.
of a Mark Reynolds, but the third base, you know, that spot in the lineup. I think Mark Reynolds obviously gives them like a huge, huge boost of something they haven't had for a long time, which is right-handed power. I also think that if they really wanted to, they could bring Mark Reynolds back. I think he hasn't gotten a multiple year deal in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you offered him something fair that would keep him in Cleveland, that would not handicap you. You know, so you're not overpaying for a guy who hits 220 but 30 home runs. I think that might be your future DH as opposed to Jason Giambi, you know. Like when you
And Giambi could be hired as a bench coach.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. When you project out on the team, I think that's a much more logical way to see things work out than to say, mm-hmm. see Jason Giambi continue to DH at 44 years old or whatever. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe he will.
Yeah.
He's got, we were talking about it before we started recording. He has some crazy stats, based on how little he's played. He's only had 109 plate appearances, but 6 home runs, 21 RBIs, and a 731 OPS while only batting 187. So, you know, he's 303 on base and a 429 slugging. That's pretty crazy. I mean, it really is. The only year of, you know, the recent years, since he was obviously a very great player, that he's had a slugging better than that was 2 years ago in Colorado. He slugged 603, but that's in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the Indians play it off at the trade deadline. There's a lot of talk of, you know, who might be moved of the middle infield prospects, because obviously that's your depth. That's where you're gonna pull from.
A lot of chatter about Rodriguez.
And that's the guy. There's a lot of chatter about Ronnie Rodriguez. And Andy and I discussed, I think it was on the way down to the Pirates game where we saw Gerrit Cole, that if I was the Indians and I had to put my money on two of them, you know, if I had to choose my two to keep, obviously I'm keeping Lindor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I'm going to choose Jose Ramirez.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ronnie Rodriguez is going to be a good player. But I think Jose Ramirez has a couple tools that make him.
Well, the question becomes then, if you're keeping those two players, middle infield prospects, would you dangle Dorsis Paulino?
I listen on Dorsis Paulino, but I have designs of Paulino at third or in a corner.
Okay.
But I listen.
Right.
It depends who you want to give.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be, if I was the Indians, my dream infield, I guess, is Ramirez, Lindor, Paulino. But, you know.
I did see, was it Jesus Aguilar has 50-plus RBIs right now?
Yeah. He needs to be promoted.
Yes, he does.
But Matt LaPorta's probably blocking that spot, first base, I'm guessing.
I haven't seen recently. What's he hitting right now? Do you know?
Matt LaPorta? Well, let's try to pull it up. I know Chun Chen has been up, but I doubt he's been playing first base. He DHs a lot. He might have been playing first. I don't know. Old Matt LaPorta. Let me pull it up here, Bob. What do you want to talk about while I get that?
It was kind of sad because if he had any value left at all, he would be. Unfortunately, he'd be that a possible power off the bench right-hand bat.
Yeah.
I mean, he's shown flashes of it in the past. Very small flashes.
flashes.
But it'd be more gratifying for us Cleveland fans to realize that, hey, we got a little bit out of Matt LaPorta instead of hardly anything.
He is batting .235.
Okay, that's not so good.
Over 81 at-bats. 4 doubles, 5 home runs, 11 RBIs, 9 walks, and 13 strikeouts. 788 OPS. See, he has power. You know, he's slugging .469, and his on base is .319. He's just not getting hits. It's just contact.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been contact. His last 10 games, he's only batting .154.
Oof. Yeah.
So, not much to look at there.
No.
You know, I'll pull up Jesus Aguilar here for you.
I do want to share on the podcast the story I mentioned to you guys earlier. This will be enjoyable for Andy. While I was attending the second start of Gerrit Cole on Father's Day at PNC Ballpark, Cole threw a pitch that, by all means, most of the whole ballpark knows a strike, as the fort rifled the ball down third base, throw the ball around, only to have the umpire call ball. So that was the first I've seen in my lifetime going to ballparks.
Yeah.
It was entertaining. Say at least.
Jesus Aguilar in 261 at-bats, playing a little more than Matt LaPorta, sitting .264 with 16 doubles, 8 homers, 57 RBIs, 31 walks, and 56 strikeouts. OPS of .760.
Not too bad.
Yeah. So I think, you know, those numbers don't scream call up, but the problem... No. Is that he's done that,
right?
At AA before, so
I was trying to think of the guy I was trying to tell you about before. I think we came up to his name. Nelly Rodriguez.
Okay.
I got to see him play in Batavia, playing for the Scrappers. And he is kind of a similar, you know, 6'2", 225 type first baseman. Just a big, solid guy.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't really show much to the plate in that game, but remember, he had success out west in, I think, the Fall League.
Chun Chen, just for comparison's sake, in Akron, hit .328, over 137 plate appearances, with 10 doubles, a triple, 6 home runs, 29 RBIs, 23 walks, 41 strikeouts, and a .974 OPS. And in Columbus right now, he's only had 125 plate appearances. He's hitting .240 with 3 doubles, 5 home runs, and 14 RBIs. 11 walks and 42 strikeouts.
Ugh.
.691 OPS. But that's his first exposure.
Right.
So hopefully he's improving. Over his last 10 games, though, he's only hit .205. So not a lot going right there for the Indians as far as first base, which is why, you know, you go out and you drop $56 million for the next 4 years on Nick Swisher, because you know there's not a lot going to be pushing him out of the way, you know, as opposed to, you know, this is something be good to get into maybe at a later date, but, you know, what do you do with Ezdrubal Cabrera?
I don't know.
You know, you've got Ronnie Rodriguez hitting .293 down in Akron. You've got Jose Ramirez. You've got Francisco Lindor. You got Darcis Paulino. You've got Joey Wendell.
I think Wendell needs to be promoted here soon. I think to Akron. He's already at an advanced age already. I want to see him hit against even tougher competition.
Problem is, though, so
it's being blocked by Ramirez and Rodriguez.
Does that mean you promote Jose Ramirez?
I don't know. Because now all of a sudden,
you don't really have a second baseman in AAA that you give to.
Wasn't Cord Bell playing about there? He's on fire again. Another hot spell for Cord.
Yes. But Cord Phelps.
Reluctantly, yes.
So what do you do with Cord Phelps then?
I don't know. Have him play third base.
Well, you could try that. I think Ryan Rollinger is playing third base, I'm going to guess right now.
I mean, you saw what Boston doing with Jose Iglesias. He's playing third base with no pop at all.
Maybe you shouldn't promote Jose Ramirez, though. He's only batting .254, and he pretty much skipped high A.
Right.
Maybe you should promote Ronnie Rodriguez, but then who's going to play short? You can make Ramirez play short?
That'd be good for versatility.
I think we're starting to get to the reason why Tony Wolters is a catcher now.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's backed up down there.
It's a log jam in the middle infield and nothing on the outer edges.
No, which is why I think maybe you need to talk about moving Darcis Paulino to third base. The problem is it's going to hurt his trade value. If you can trade Darcis Paulino, you trade him as a shortstop prospect.
Can Cleveland, I was rumored last year a little bit, acquire Chase Headley to play third base?
I'm sure they can.
Yeah.
The question is, do they want to?
Right.
See, I think it all comes down to what you want this year to be.
I don't know.
If this isn't the year you're going to push all your chips to the center of the table, which I don't think it can be.
No.
Then I think you got to let Lonnie Chisenhall play third base. Because you've got to know, do I need a Chase Headley?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need somebody else? Or is Lonnie Chisenhall going to hold it together? Because, you know, Mike Avilas is not third baseman. He's a great backup.
Has there been any more talk about Ezdrubal moving to third base?
You know, it's talked about, and that's kind of where I was going with what do you do with Ezdrubal Cabrera? You signed Mike Avilas for 2 years. He's not as good a shortstop.
No.
But you've got Ronnie Rodriguez in Double A, who could be promoted. He's hitting almost 300 over 250 plate appearances.
I give him a shot at Triple A first a little bit.
Juan Diaz is, you know, he is Juan Diaz.
Right.
I don't think he's going to be much more than he is right now. He's an interesting prospect, but he doesn't fit anywhere because he's so interesting. He's tall, lanky, powerful for that spot, but his batting numbers don't really reflect that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Kind of just rambling about the Indians here, but, you know, we're getting to the trade season, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do. What do the Indians do? What do the Pirates do?
I'm really curious, too, about Scott Kazmir. How much longer did they give him before they say, hey, this inconsistency up and down is a good story, but need some more.
Well, and that's, do you put Scott Kazmir in the bullpen?
It's a possibility.
Is he your lefty?
Made for a little bit.
Well, that's all going to shake out here over the next couple weeks, I guess. As our new slogan here at TSM, straight from Tito's mouth, is these things have a way of working themselves out. So I guess we're going to wrap it up. Is that all you got, Bob? We're over the hour mark.
All I got.
All right.
Been fun.
Well, for Andy, he's not here, but I guess we'll say for Andy, soaking up the sun. It'll make him tickle his heartstrings when he's listening to it.
Make his heart a flutter, as he says.
Make his heart a flutter as he's sitting on the beach. But, you know, check us out on iTunes. Give us a good review. Give us a tweet mail. Bob's favorite word. At TriStateBB. Check us out on Facebook. All that good stuff Andy usually says. For Bob, Garrett, and Andy, this is Jason signing off for this week. We'll see you next week.